The weather has changed. It's actually sunny and mild. It's around about 10 degrees Celsius. It's coming up to 4 o'clock on Thursday, the 18th of February, which means it's high time. We press the magic buttons, we've heard the band play, and we say, ladies and gentlemen, will you give a very warm UK welcome to His Lordship Bruce K. Rosenbloom of the Man Cave in Los Angeles? Are you there, Bruce?
I am, and I'm not worthy of your lordship. I'm really not. I'm just one of the regular folk, you know.
Well, we're talking of lordships, of course. We're all on the edge of our seats here in the United Kingdom, and you want to do a little something because the news
Yeah,
about the Duke of
well,
Edinburgh.
but it's no secret that Prince Philip, correct? He's
Indeed, it is, yes.
and I want to make sure I got the title right. Has been all over the news here with reports that he's taken ill, and you know, someone like myself who's followed the royal family for years and years and years, I just want to give our best wishes to his full and speedy recovery. You know, may he have continued good health. And so we're all rooting and praying for him. And you know, what more can we say? You
And
know,
fingers crossed,
that's our
he
best
said,
wishes to him and his family.
indeed, and fingers crossed, he makes it to his 100th birthday, which is only in about a couple of months' time. Now, there's also some other royal news because almost just down the road from you, a couple of our royalty, Prince Harry and Meghan, they've also had some happy news recently, which made it to the papers with them sitting outside underneath trees and lovely luxuriant grass. It appears she's overcome the problem she had last year with her miscarriage, and she's pregnant.
And that's made headlines here as well. And you know, you know, I think, you know, they're an interesting couple, and I think that, you know, they have a good following here. People are interested in what they do and in the good work that they do. And I think they're all rooting for them to have a successful full term second child this time. And
That'd be
from what I
lovely.
understand, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought I heard on the news it says that they have a that they live in Montecito, that they have I guess say a home in Montecito, where Oprah Winfrey is up in Montecito. There's a lot of celebrities have taken to the 45-minute trek north of Los Angeles. Montecito is this little beautiful little community that's tucked away between Los Angeles and Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
It's just lovely there, and they have it's quaint. They have beautiful little shops and restaurants up there, so it's a lovely area. So I will make you this promise that the next time you're a guest at the Rosenblum bed and breakfast, we'll take that 45-minute ride up there and see if we can find them and do a meet and greet, if at all possible. That would be
Yeah.
fun.
Well, we can but hope. I mean, the interesting thing is this trip and tour that is getting bigger and bigger and bigger because it's going to take in all sorts of things. It's going to take in that rapper weekend, Chappie, and also where the first, second man in the world, or the husband of your vice president. What's his proper title now? First, second man,
He's
or
the first
second first
gentleman.
man?
The second, he's the second gentleman.
Second gentleman. Right. Okay.
Right.
I'll have to write that down and make sure I commit it to memory. Anyway, talking about things politics, which is what we should be talking about, we've got some good stuff about Joe Biden to chat about in a minute. But President Trump, he had a slight victory last week, didn't he?
Well, yes and no. I mean, he was acquitted again for the second time in the impeachment trial that went to the Senate. But this time there was the most bipartisan support for conviction than ever before. There was seven, it was 57 to 43. Seven Republican senators broke ranks and voted to convict. So even though he had the majority, they had a majority. Unfortunately, the way it works is that you need a two-thirds of the Senate to convict. So they needed 67, so they fell about 10 votes short. But it still sent a strong message. That they've, you know, that in if it was just a simple majority, he would have been convicted. And of course, that again is kind of emboldened and empowered him down in Florida as he left the golf course in his SUV to do whatever, driving, you know, near Mar-a-Lago. His fringe supporters were out with the flags and lining the streets and doing what they do to, you know, give him that show of support. And now he is basically on what they're calling the revenge tour, because he's promised to be back, and he said this is only the beginning of making America great again, and it's the whole thing all over again, and he's going to go after and try to primary as many of those that opposed him and voted for impeachment and voted to convict as possible. And soon after the trial ended, Mitch McConnell made this statement that was just so, you know, unbelievable, to because he found a loophole, basically, not to convict, because even though they voted not to, they voted that the trial would be some were wrestling whether it was going to be constitutional or not. They voted to move forward with it as a constitutional trial, but McConnell just said basically that he still felt that the trial was not constitutional, and therefore he couldn't vote to convict. But he did blame everything that happened on Trump. Said he was, you know, he lit the fuse, he incited the riots, and he should be held accountable, and that he still can be held accountable in criminal cases, in civil cases, if there is evidence and charges that can be filed. So he went on record saying that, and people were like dumbfounded, because if he would have just come out and felt this way and voted to convict, they might have gotten others to go along and break ranks and just put an end to Trump once and for all. But they left the door open for him to run, and so, you know, who knows what's going to happen. But it didn't sit well with Trump what he said. So now he and Mitch McConnell are in a war of words. Trump calling him a sullen, dour, unsmiling political hack. McConnell's wife, Elaine Chao, as you remember, was Trump's Secretary of Transportation, and she quit when the riot started because of what she saw and was just offended by what was happening. So, it remains to be seen where this all goes. But McConnell doesn't do anything unless it's strategically kind of planned out to his advantage. And I think what he's trying to do now is, I think they're trying to drive a wedge through the Republican Party and separate the Trumpists versus the true Republicans who want to take the party back to where it was before Trump.
And of course, the thing is, there were, six or eight Republicans who voted in favor of impeaching him. How's it played out for them? Because it can't be very comfortable for them.
No, it's not. It's certainly not. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
No. You carry on, because hasn't one of them suddenly found himself at the wrong end of a war of words in the newspapers?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, 11 in the House, 11 Republicans broke ranks and voted to impeach, and seven senators in the Senate voted to convict. Adam Kinzinger, who's from Illinois, has been very vocal about Trump's role in blaming Trump for what happened, and thinks that, you know, he's actually started a new PAC to raise money for real Republicans to get the party back to where it was. But his family was horrified by what he did, and they did an op-ed in the New York Times, and they've disowned him. Cousins and uncles and I think even his own sister, I may be wrong on that one also, but his family members basically have disowned him, and, you know, he expected it, and, you know, he's saddened by it, but, you know, it's not going to deter him. This guy is a military guy who got elected. I've heard him speak a number of times, and I'll tell you, if, you know, I could see myself voting for this guy, because he's a straight shooter. You know, he's not all about all the lunacy. He's really about, you know, doing the right thing for the American people and the country. And that's a Republican I could get behind if he ever ran for bigger office at one point. I'd have to really look closely at it. And I just feel bad for these people, because now they're all going to be, you know, they're going to be all take, you know, the one thing that's good is that he doesn't have a Twitter account or social media, so he can't attack them there. But he's issuing statements, and he's, and by his actions and getting, you know, getting behind people, it could get ugly. But, you know, I did a poll. I saw a poll yesterday that said that about 75% of the people polled said that 60% were very sure that Trump couldn't win again, and another 15% were somewhat sure that he couldn't win again. And I don't think Trump can win again. I just think too many people have seen what he did, what he tried to do, create a dictatorship, isolate the country, try to stop the kind of progress that's being made toward multiculturalism in this country. You can't go backwards.
No.
And it just can't happen. And that ship has sailed.
And of course,
all the nonsense.
Absolutely. I think the thing that we have had to learn over the last 12 months, particularly because we are almost coming up to the anniversary of us doing this little Thursday show, because we started, of course, in lockdown, is that other things can change the nature of the way we think about life, the world and the universe. And the world that you'll be moving into in maybe two and a half years' time in the run-up to the next general election in the United States may be completely different. And by that time, the Republican Party may have changed or splintered. They may be Republican A and Trumpists. And who knows what the Democratic Party will have done, or indeed, who knows what else may have happened, maybe with a third group, with the independents growing. We don't know, because, of course, if we look back this time last year, we were just starting the final big race for the White House, and things were a bit like they used to be rather than as they eventually became. I think one of the fascinating things, just listening to what you were saying, is you are a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, and people have said, gosh, he really does get passionate. We love listening to him. We love listening to the way that Bruce articulates himself, because he gets passionate but keeps it in check. The fact that a moment ago you said you would have to look very carefully at that Republican and the way he was expressing himself and the ideas he was expressing shows actually the better way and the best way forward for people to understand politics and the political dilemmas that we tend to find ourselves when they become polarized, whereas actually it should be about listening and understanding what is the best way forward for the country. I'll stop ranting now, and you have the talking stick.
Well, let's see, where were we going here? But to say this about, you know, the tone, as you were saying, you know, people are really saying that it's just a nice feeling to wake up every morning and not to have to see the vitriol and the hate tweets and all this, the things that the name calling that was going on. Biden's changed the tone of the White House. He ventured out for his first town hall in Milwaukee, Wisconsin the other night. And he was such, the reviews on him and the ratings were huge, and the reviews were great. I mean, he's authentic. He showed his, you know, he's what they call a mensch. You know, he's empathetic. He looks people in the eye, and he truly cares about what they have to say. And it's such a nice, it's such a breath of fresh air to have just a real president in the White House that is well read, you know, understands the issues of the world, you know, and rather than, you know, just laying blame and making, you know, knee-jerk reactions, what he's doing is well thought out. He talked about the vaccine being available in this country to everybody by July. He talked about possibly by Christmas having the country back to somewhat normal. Although he did, you know, he's not perfect, because he did, you know, ruffle some feathers, particularly on the progressive side. Talking about one of the questions that he was asked the other night was about forgiving student debt, and the girl said, "Are you gonna go up to the $50,000 limit that the progressive wing of the party wants?" And he said, "No, I'm at $10,000 of forgiveness. But if you do volunteer work, you can work off more of that debt." And that kind of riled up Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, because they've been pushing for $50,000 relief. And he said, "I'm against it. I'm at 10. So, you know, that's probably negotiable at some, you know, through in his bill. You know, it could start at 10. It probably won't get to 50, but it may get closer or somewhere in between. But apparently they weren't too happy. And I think that he's trying to send a message to those who say he's a puppet of the progressives by pushing back on him. So I think that was probably, you know, kind of calculated. But, you know, they're saying that there could be four parties. There could be a progressive Democratic Party, a more centrist Democratic Party, a more centrist Republican, and then a Trump branch. So we could end up with four factions going ahead. One of the things that's already happened in Georgia is, you know, Reverend Raphael Warnock, who won one of the two Georgia seats.
Yeah.
That was only for a short period of time. It's only until the 2022 election, because his seat was, I believe, he ran against Kelly Loeffler, and she was appointed. And so he won the remainder of that term, I believe, until 2022.
Right.
He has to run for his full six-year term at that point. Well, it was announced yesterday that David Perdue, the other senator who lost to John Ossoff, he is planning to run against Warnock in 2022. And Perdue is a favorite of Mitch McConnell, and they have a big war chest. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I think Stacey Abrams is going to rally the troops down there in Atlanta and get the vote out, and they're going to start early. So I think both the Democrats and the Republicans have their eye on Georgia. Because, again, you know, that Senate's a 50-50 split right now, and neither one of these parties can afford to give up seats. So, but there's a number of Republican senators that are retiring, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. And then Lara Trump, Eric Trump's wife, is from North Carolina, and she is thinks that, you know, she's got a good following in North Carolina, and she's going to run against, I believe, Richard Burr, who's the Republican Senate, one of the Republican senators from North Carolina there. So, and Burr also voted to convict in the, and so that probably gave them more fuel for the fire. So some of these Senate races are going to be interesting because Trump's going to be backing candidates, and one of the candidates could be his own daughter-in-law. So we'll see, we'll end up seeing. It's going to get interesting in the next couple of years. But right now, you know, we're trying to put all this Trump stuff behind us and let Biden do his thing. And so far, so good with Biden. He's leading the country. He's being straight with the country, which he promised. I think he's really making the right moves. So we'll see. You know, his first plan to get that stimulus bill passed, that's going to kind of come to a head in the next couple of weeks. We'll have to keep an eye on that. But a couple of things with Trump. You know, they imploded his Atlantic City, one of his Atlantic City hotels yesterday.
They what?
It could have been kind of a subliminal, you know, they imploded the hotel, but it's kind of a symbolic implosion, you know, because certainly he imploded at the end of his term. And then one of the conservative voices of radio, Rush Limbaugh, died. And
now he is what they call in the UK a shock jock. He was an interesting character. Basically, he opened his mouth and he didn't worry what came out. I think it's probably the best way to describe it, isn't it?
Yeah, he was a Republican pundit. He was kind of a legitimate pundit back in the probably 80s or 90s, and then he got a syndicated television show, and when he got that TV show, his tune started to change, and he started to push the envelope, and he got a little bit more fringe-like. And, you know, he started saying things that, you know, were just kind of like more, like you said, like shock jockish. And then after that show went off the air, he took to radio, and he found a voice in radio, and then he really moved to the right and to the right fringe. And he really gets the credit for kind of putting the country in the position of where it is right now, very divided, because he would say things that were just so so racist and so anti-Semitic and just, you know, on the cusp of really being something that, you know, you'd want to throw him in jail for. The vitriol and the hate that he spewed on a daily basis to millions of people are really part of the reason where, you know, where we are today, and the reason that, you know, Trump was able to rise from the ashes and come, you know, and win a presidential election. And, you know, and so when he died, you know, people said, you know, they would say condolences to the family, and that was pretty much it. But most people were saying, and I hate to say this, but good riddance to bad rubbish, because it's just that's the kind of voice that most Americans feel better having silenced at this point. And you know, and there's still a few more out there like him that we'd like to see go away. But, you know, having the voice of Rush Limbaugh silenced is, you know, as we start to, you know, move ahead in the next 4 years with Biden, that's a big voice that's gone, mm-hmm. You know, and a voice that was mainstream, where these other guys right now are very are very niche oriented. They're appealing to a lunatic fringe rather than the mass audience. So
fascinating times, absolutely.
Yeah, kind of a blessing in disguise in a way, they say.
Yeah. Do we hear very much about the Vice President, Kamala Harris? Is she going about her duties, but just playing the Vice President's role, which is what Joe Biden played to President Obama?
Right. Well, she's there. She appears with him wherever possible as to support him. And she's, you know, the last person to leave the room, as they promised. But, you know, she's falling into the traditional role of the Vice President where, you know, it's kind of like, seen but not heard a little bit. But I think that there'll be certain issues and certain things where she will emerge as kind of taking the leadership role on. I mean, I'm sure he'll announce some certain, you know, committees or programs that she will take lead on. She did go to West Virginia and went to Arizona to kind of pitch the Biden stimulus plan. And was in both the Senate, the Democratic Senator Joe Manchin in West Virginia and Kristen Sinema in Arizona were a little bit taken aback because she kind of went on the airwaves there and started talking about things that those two senators weren't briefed on ahead of time. So they were taken by surprise at some of the things that Kamala was pushing for without having covered them off first. So they were a little bit miffed at her for that, but I think that fences have been mended and they will be on board with whatever Biden wants to do. But so she ruffled a few feathers early on, been somewhat traditionally quiet as the vice presidents usually are, but I think that you will see her start to take on some higher profile projects and role over time.
And of course, it is early days. I mean, we're always. Yeah. I think we're both sides of the Atlantic. We so want something to happen, and we all want it to sort itself out. And of course, it's going to take a while. And of course, on top of that, we still have the pandemic. We have the vaccine rolls out and things like that. The news is that I'm off to have my cohort has now been called, and I'm off to have the jab on Monday.
Well, I just want to just reassure you that it's a good thing. Jackie and I had the Pfizer. We've had both of our Pfizer shots now. We came through it unscathed. I mean, we had a little bit of sluggishness, a little bit of soreness, but didn't last more than a day. We feel great. People that we know that have taken the Moderna shots and friends that we have, other friends that we have in the United Kingdom have taken the AstraZeneca, have all reported very little side effect and, smooth sailing for most. So you have nothing to worry about. And I know that you're strong and you'll be fine.
Thank you very much indeed for those touching words.
I'm not a doctor, but I play one on the radio.
Yes, Dr. Bruce K. Rosenblum says it as it is. Well, of course, the thing is, you've got to say it as it is. The other advice I've had from one of our listeners, our dedicated friend of Siren, Nigel, who is of a medical persuasion, he had it done and he said his arm felt like he'd been kicked by a small pony. So if that's all it is, I'm quite happy to go with that.
We have an interesting situation brewing in part of the country here. We're having very, very bad weather. And I'm sure something in all seriousness, I'm sure John Ketley could talk about. But in the panhandle, the southwest in Texas and mainly, really Texas is getting hit hard by horrendous weather, freezing temperatures. They've had major power outages. The people have been going without power for days now. And and while this is all going on, Ted Cruz, the senator from Texas, decided to take a vacation to Cancun.
Oh.
And the governor has been blaming the outages on falsely blaming the outages on renewable energy. And that's calculated because, one of Biden's agenda items is growing renewable energy sources as ways to create new jobs going forward, clean energy. And so, to be saying that to be blaming the problems in Texas on renewable energy is just unconscionable, for one, and wrong, number two. And it's part, when you have the kinds of extreme weather that they're having down there, I don't care what kind of energy sources you have, they're going to be subject to breaking down, and that's what's happening down there. So that's an interesting one to watch.
And we think of quite a few of our friends who listen actually live in Texas and that part of the world. And it's not a sort of part of the world that you immediately associate with heavy snowfall. You tend to associate it with heavy temperatures. But some of the pictures have been quite extraordinary.
Yeah, the country is, Tucker Carlson on Fox News was saying that he was equating Joe Biden and Jill Biden's love story. He's saying it's like a slickly produced ad campaign, that it's like not real. And he's saying it's almost as real as the climate problems that we're having. Again, it's like it's unconscionable the kinds of things these journalists say on just for shock value.
Oh my goodness.
For those that deny climate change and climate, come to different parts of this country. Come to hurricane season down in Florida. And in the Gulf, come with freezing temperatures throughout the Midwest from Illinois all the way down to Texas. Mm. Even California, we still have not had nearly enough rain in quite some time. We've had very cold temperatures. We're at 54 right now. Today's actually a warmer day, and the high is going to be 68, believe it or not, today.
Whoa.
But they keep promising rain and there's no rain. It's like, where is it? So we have polar ice cap issues going on. I mean, there's all sorts of things happening. For people that deny that there's climate change, it's unbelievable when the days of summer the temperatures get hotter and hotter, and when winter comes, it gets colder and colder, and when the rains come, they get stronger and more destructive. You've got to wonder what the heck is going on, and you've got to figure out what you can do about it. So.
Well, Bruce, I think we're going to have to call it a day there. Thank you very much indeed for spending time with us here on Siam Radio. Although I am having my jab on Monday, we are not preempting any disaster, but there won't be a program this time next week. We have all sorts of really exciting things going on at Siam, and we need a bit of space to make sure they all work properly. So can we call you up in a fortnight's time?
You can call me any time, any day of the night, any day of the week, any time of the night. I'm always here for you and our friends and listeners up in Lincoln.
That's very good. Bruce K. Rosenblum, thank you very much indeed for being with us today.
You're very welcome, Andrew. Be safe, everybody.